Part of a Scandinavian immigrant experience collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The day today is March 22, 1983. The interview is taking place at the home of Torvald Opsahl and is being conducted by Inger Carr. What is your full name?
Cato Torvald Opsahl.
When and where were you born?
May 6, 1910 in Vikedal, Stavanger, Norway.
Vikedal, Stavanger. Now, what do you say about?
Because Vikedal isn't, that's just the hamlet. All mail came through Stavanger and then sent out to the different small places in the bays.
Oh, so
Vikedal is, Stavanger is the home base, that's the main town. Mm-hmm. And all these little places in the bays, well, they had different names, you know, Sandy, Imsland, Vikedal, and so forth.
So it was close to Stavanger then?
Yeah, it's only but. Well, but 2 hours by ferry.
Mm-hmm. Was it right on the coast, too?
Oh, yeah, right on the water.
Oh.
Well, it's in a bay, but right on the water.
Uh-huh. What were your parents' names?
My mother's name was Kirsti.
Kirsti what?
Maiden name was Kirsti Fatlan.
Okay.
And my dad was Torkel Opsahl.
Now, tell me something about them. Were they from...
They were born and raised in Vikedal. My dad, he left home in 1900, went over to Minnesota and North Dakota and stayed for 6 years. And he came back in 1906, got married in 1907, and took over a place at home, his dad's, my granddad's place, and start raising a family, and that was it.
Was it a farm?
Yeah.
Did you say a place?
Yeah. It's a small farm, 7-8 cows, you know, and a horse and stuff, and then they had boats and nets and stuff like that. Did a little fishing on the side.
So did you think he earned his living mostly by fishing?
Or? No. That's mostly dairy. Sold the milk.
Oh, did they?
The milk. And then they had timber, they had woods, you know, they would cut timber and sell,
mm-hmm.
like most of them did. They pretty much lived the same way, the whole...
Oh, did they?
The whole area. But
it's all different in every area, you know.
Yeah, well, down there it was mostly little farming, and
mm-hmm.
little two-bit logging, and then some fishing. It was diversified.
I see. They had big enough farms so that you grew your own crops. And
oh yeah, they sold a lot of things from the farm. Heck, like cattle, it was sell enough cattle to meet the bills and sell some pigs and stuff. You know, you raised and
mm-hmm.
sheep. You raised quite a bit, quite a few sheep. I think we had one time we had 60, 70 sheep, and of course you. Sell the wool, and that wool goes with, when you sell the sheep to the slaughterhouse, they get the wool, but you get paid for it, so you didn't have to do any.
But you didn't have to take it off?
No. Took it off in the spring, but not in the fall.
Mm-hmm. How big a family did
you have? We were three kids. We were four kids. We were three boys and a girl.
Can you just tell me the names of your brothers and sisters?
Well, my
just
oldest,
what they did.
My oldest brother, his name was Ole. He went to sea when he was about 14, 15. And he became a skipper.
Mm-hmm.
He was he was quite young when he got his first ship. And he sailed on tankers during the war out of San Pedro, Norwegian tankers, but to the South Pacific. And then after quite a few years as a sea captain, he went ashore and settled in Oslo. His wife was from Elverum. And he thought he'd try life ashore, but he had never been ashore, you know, since he was confirmed.
Sure.
So he bought himself a story. They had these, I think it was a 4 or 5 story building in Oslo with apartments in it, but you could buy one story. I think his flat was six apartments, I think. So he bought that sixth story or whatever it was, and tried apartment, but of course he didn't like it. So he took a course, being that he was a captain already, he took a course, a pilot course, in being a pilot in Oslo, taking boats in and out of the harbor. Mm-hmm. So of course he passed that right away, and he kept that for 10, 12, 15 years, whatever it was, till he retired from piloting in Oslo. Mm-hmm. And then he lives in Elverum now. They moved up, his wife was from Elverum, so they moved up to Elverum. And my second brother, his name is Einar Upsal, and he took over the place. He stayed home and took over the place, and he just sold the place now to some other relative. So he's retired, and my sister, she has worked for a co-op. She's kind of buying stuff, goes into town and buys stuff for the co-op store, and she is still doing that. Hmm. She was over here, was it 3 years ago? Four years ago. She stayed here with us for a month, and she liked it.
Mm-hmm. But she didn't stay.
No, she was still working, you know. She's the youngest in the family. So she was still working. She built her own house, and they have it. I've never seen the place because I've been home only once in 54 years.
Wow. Do you remember your grandparents?
Oh, yes. I remember.
Tell me their names.
My granddad on my dad's side, his name was Ola Amundsen.
Amundsen, I thought she was
Opsal. The Opsal came later because my granddad and his two brothers, they were three, they had a shipyard. They built good-sized sailing ships for a living, and they had that shipyard for many, many years. When they sold the shipyard, they bought, all three of them bought a farm apiece of these small farms, and that's how Opsal came in. Their name were Amundsen, but they bought the Opsal farms. So they were, well, two of them were Opsal, and the third one went up in the valley, and his name became Mo. And there are a lot of Mo's in the Midwest that came out of that family.
Oh, really?
Especially Minnesota, around Mayville and Finley. And
those
Mo's, they all came out of that family, and there must be hundreds of them back there. Some are professors, some are this and that.
And you're related to them, and you don't have the same name.
No, they are Mo, because that's my granddad's other brother, third brother. He moved up in the valley and took over, and so Amundsen became Mo. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's the way they did it. That's how my dad, actually, when my dad was born, he would have had to be Amundsen, because my granddad still had a shipyard at the time. But he became Upsal when he... See, my granddad became Ole Amundsen Upsal after he bought that farm when he quit shipyard.
Yes.
And my grandmother on that side, she came from... Her name was Margrethe Roalquam. And she came from way up at the head of the valley. Way up. And because she died in her, I don't know, probably early 60s. I remember, I was very small, but I remember what she looked like. Mm-hmm. But my granddad, of course, he was blind for, I bet you, almost half of the life that I was home, because I did all his reading.
Oh.
I read books, papers, you name it, and I sat there reading continuously for him. Because he was so interested in everything. He was quite a religious man.
Uh-huh.
And then on my mother's side, I never knew. My granddad on my mother's side, I never knew because he died early. But my grandmother on my mother's side, she, her name was Ingeborg Fatlan. And she got to be 98 or 99. And she was healthy to the day she died. And she lived on a farm up in the, about halfway up in the valley. And they had 9 kids.
Wow.
My mother was one of them. And she had a brother. My uncle used to live in Olympia. That's where I came. And I came out to the coast here. And
what was her husband's name, though, even if you don't remember it?
Torbjörn what's his name? Fatland. Mm-hmm. Poor.
Do you remember anything particular about him?
I don't know. I never saw him, and he died years. I think he died before I was born.
How about her?
My grandmother. Well, she was just a quite hard-working woman, light, small, could outrun any sheep the day she died. I think she was light and active.
Was she really?
Very, very, yeah. She was very, very good. Good health up to the very last.
Uh-huh.
I think she just died from old age. But there were, otherwise, she was a quiet. There was nothing going on back there up in the valleys, you know. They lived a quiet life.
Did her work. And
did her work, and that did most, all the spinning, all that, they did all their weaving, and they had all kinds of, they made everything they needed practically.
Sure they did.
Mm-hmm. They did. Those old timers, they were good at it too. Mm-hmm. But it's a hard life. But still, she had all she needed. They had money, enough money to live on. And
well, that's all they knew too. You know?
That's all they knew, and that's all they needed to know living up there.
Yeah.
They didn't need anything else up there. But they, even at that time, they had schools. They had good schools.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as grade schools, you never got any higher education. But my gosh, even my grandmother, old as she was then, she had gone to grade school like the rest of us, and that's a good many years ago. So he must have had a fairly good school system back there.
Oh, yes. I'm sure they did. What can you remember about your school?
Well, I remember when I started school, I had the same teacher my dad had gone to all his life.
Really?
His name was Holger Eide, and he had been teaching my dad. And he was real old when I started. I started six, when I was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I can still remember, I could read at that time, which they had learned at home, I guess. I don't know when we learned it. I can't even remember that.
You did. Mm-hmm. Learned at home.
Because, and he used to take us, he was sitting in our place, and then he put us on his lap, you know, and he was chewing some kind of, not tobacco, kind of a root of some kind. And I can still smell that stuff.
Really?
And then he was, you know, he was going to show us stuff, and he knew better. He knew pretty much that what we knew, but he was still going to do it.
Oh.
But then he gave us, he didn't say too much because he couldn't do it. Some of them were pretty slow in learning, but any time he would brag a little bit, you know, you felt pretty good.
Sure. He told you when you did.
He did tell us. But they were kind of foxy, those old teachers, too. They wouldn't do anything to embarrass somebody that was a little slower. See, you had some that just couldn't get anything into their head. We had one especially. I wouldn't mention his name. He was so stupid. There was absolutely nothing he could learn, reading or anything. But when we were home on a trip, he had a big store in Stavanger, greeting cards. He was just a beautiful. He could do any kind of a drawing.
He liked art.
But we didn't have enough of it, so it didn't come out, you see. He had picked it up later.
That's good that he did.
My gosh, he had gotten into town and got into the store of his own, and he was drawing all the outlines and all the wow. kinds of fancy cards of all sorts.
He's probably just bored with the reading and
well,
writing.
He was just too dumb. He couldn't get it all through the years.
Mm.
And then you had some that were way ahead. My brother, and I was a skipper, and a couple other guys, they didn't have books or any arithmetic books or any reading material in our school. You see, they had to send to the high school and someplace else for these three guys to get material. They didn't hold them back.
Uh-huh.
What they didn't have, they sent for these guys.
That's good.
But that would be a little more than what we handled because we came later, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But we were talking about so many classes in one room. I still believe that was good because we could be way behind, say 2-3 years behind, and the same teacher would stand up there and we could listen actually to what he was teaching.
Sure.
These higher ups, we caught on to something there before we got there ourselves.
You learned, yeah, from there.
And they claimed it doesn't work, but it worked good back home.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have room for him. See, we were so many.
In Minnesota.
Oh, you did? Mm-hmm. I think it was good. Mm-hmm. At least it couldn't hurt you.
No.
You had to pick up something from the ones ahead of you when you were right there with them. Mm-hmm. That's the way I felt about it. But then times were tough, you know. After confirmation, you had to go to work. There was no way that they could send you into town to high school.
Did you want to go to more school, do you think?
Not particularly. I, at that time, I started work right after confirmation. In fact, I started before confirmation. I worked in a rock quarry with a truck driver. We hauled goddess in, you know, the cobblestones. Mm-hmm. They had a granite rock quarry, and we hauled it down to the dock, and the steamers came in and picked it up. So I made fairly good money in that, and then I was set to come here anyway. That I had not.
Oh, were you?
Oh, yeah.
Way before, huh? Well, first, before we get to America, how about the church? Was it closed there?
Oh, yeah. We had the main church. You see, the minister, he had three churches. Mm-hmm. And our church was the main. Then they had Imsland and Sunday was on both sides. So he alternated, see, every third Sunday. But he lived in Vikadal, where I came from. That was the church. They had a farm. Mm-hmm. Kirkegarn.
You know, Kirkegarn, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was state-owned, of course. They were state-paid. Mm-hmm. And I had... I had only... When I was confirmed, I was the first class of this minister I went for. He used to be a Riksmål minister. He was from way up north, and then he had turned over to Landsmål, you know, that old Norwegian.
Yes.
And I was the first class that he... taught in Landsmål because he just came to our place then. But I have a book someplace for all the history of Vikadal and the pictures of all the ministers. And, oh my gosh, it goes way back. And that was quite interesting. My sister sent it to me. But the church, that was like any other church back there. They all looked alike and they were all state. Mm-hmm.
But it was important in your family.
My gosh, that was a must. Everybody had to go to church on Sunday. All that Sunday. And then beside Sunday, you had Sunday school.
Oh, you did?
In what he called Bedehuset, you know. That.
Uh-huh.
And my granddad, he was active in that all the time. And some other people there, our teacher, Hegebu, he was quite active. So we had Sunday school every Sunday except that Sunday we had church.
So
we all had to go to Sunday school on Bedehuset.
So you really had worship every Sunday then?
Oh, every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then you had this half an hour a day in school every day.
Yeah, they'd learn the teaching.
The Bible history and all of that beside the regular religion. You know, the one thing I couldn't never get into my head was that old, what they call Bible history home. That was a book in itself, and it was practically all dates. Very little to read. It, just a little bit what happened, and then date.
And, you had to learn all that?
You bet. You had to learn it, and they had to... learn it at home and come and tell the teacher the next day. So there was you couldn't get away from it. Some would be lucky enough not to be called on, but most of the time you had to know it. You didn't know where you'd be called on, you see.
Sure you did, sure.
But I think the teachers home were good, and it took a long time, even at that time, to become a good teacher. My gosh, our teacher home, he was the choir director. We had a good choir. He was an organist in church. He gave piano, organ, and violin lessons. He was good at all three instruments.
Oh, wow, talented man.
He was, but he was no youngster. He had gone to school for I don't know how long, and he'd been teaching. He was from our neighborhood, too, a little closer to Bergen from our place.
Now, was he your school teacher your Sunday school teacher?
He was our school teacher and alternate Sunday school teacher. There were three, four that would teach Sunday school, you know. It wasn't only one that was put on. We had one that had her widow that had a post office home. She and her daughter, they would alternate, you know, take turns.
Was the Bedehus part of the state church, or was that?
No, that was separate. That was community operated.
Okay. Was the Salvation Army that was in there?
No, they would, when the Salvation Army came in on their tours, they would use the Bedehus for their meetings, but they had nothing to do with it.
Oh, no. I see.
It was strictly owned by the.
Uh-huh. Did you go to that?
Salvation Army?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. We went to anything to come because there was not.
What about Christmas time? What about Christmas time in your
home? Well, that was that was a week or two. You started in, you know, the family, especially the mother, they would start in almost a week early with all the baking and all the goodies.
Oh, at least a week. More than that, wasn't it?
But then it lasted till after New Year's, you know.
Yes, I know. But and I mean, as far as the preparation, that took
that started day. Early, very early, and they all dug in, did that part. And we all always look forward to it, because actually what we get out of Christmas was, it wasn't presents like you do now. It was food, good food. That's what we look forward to.
That's the Norwegian.
In fact, I don't think I remember ever having a present or giving one till the last year or two before I left. It wasn't, nobody did.
Uh-huh.
I didn't.
Did you have a tree in your home?
Always a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Always a tree. And
what did you?
And you made your own decoration. You bought a few, like the top, the spear, and a few little things, but most of us made it right at home.
Mm-hmm. Paper.
All kinds of colored paper. Mm-hmm. Links and the chains and this and that, you know, you cut them out. Or there was always a tree.
Candles in the tree?
Yeah, they were live. That was regular candles.
Never
with
fire.
With the clip on.
Yeah.
They had that when they had a big Christmas tree festival down in that Bedehus for all the kids and grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
They have an enormous big tree, and they had all candles, but once in a while they would tip over, and after a bit the tree got a little dry, you know, and they had to go over there and get the fire out.
Yeah.
But funny, nothing ever happened. For all the years, they would have had a fire here, I think, any time.
Yes. Now, did you have special food Christmas Eve?
Oh, yes. You always
said
special. Well, I wouldn't say it's special. It's something they could cook all through the year, but at Christmas, there was so much more of it.
Oh.
Especially all kinds of different breads, you know, with raisins and all kinds of wheat bread. There were so many things, all kinds of pastry that you didn't get during they could make it, but you never used it during the rest of the year. It was for Christmas.
Of course.
And outside of that,
did you have a special dinner Christmas Eve?
Christmas Eve was mostly meat at our place. We had and rice, raisin grit.
Yeah.
That was a must. And I still remember when the last few years we had our own place, but when we were young, real young. They had a big, what the heck do you call it? A big bowl, but a tureen, we call it, you know. It sat on a stand, and it was big.
Yeah.
And that was almost like flute de grut, or something between that and rice. And then it was floating, some sugar, floating in butter. And then they had this.
It was rice, though. It wasn't remigret.
No, it wasn't plain remigret. It was rice. But it was cooked so fine and so nice, you wouldn't know it was rice.
Oh,
but they cooked it for hours and hours, that stuff.
Yes, yes.
And then they had this sauce, this red sauce on top of all this. But you know, we set that like there, and we all took a spoon and ate out of that thing.
Out of the bowl?
Out of that bowl. Because we didn't get far. We didn't get up to the next guy. The bowl was too big. But later on, then you had your own plates. I don't know why they did, but I was very little then.
Uh-huh.
And that's the custom at that time. But I still remember that. That was the best stuff, and I have never been able to get it here or any other place.
Well, just cook your rice a long time.
They cooked it, and they
cooked
it.
Milk.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
But that stuff they put on it, too, you know, floating in butter and that red sauce that. I don't know what that was, but I can still see it. Oh, beautiful. No, it wasn't that strong. It was milder. Tittabit would be a little, you know, on the strong side. But that was good.
Raspberries or?
It was some kind of a berry. I was a little then, I didn't take interest in it. I just knew it was good.
Uh-huh. You didn't have lutefisk though?
I never tasted lutefisk till I came here to Nomana Hall, and I didn't like it. I still am not too crazy.
So that wasn't particular in your.
We never had it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nobody had it where I came from. I never
you
heard
had
of
raisin
it.
Raisin gingerette and then some kind of meat, huh?
Yeah, we had roast. What they call a steak, you know, usually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was a roast, mm-hmm. and
now that was Christmas Eve, and did you go to church Christmas morning early?
Christmas morning, not early, regular time, because the Christmas day was. Our main church, the rest of them didn't have it. We had it at our church Christmas Day. The
minister,
yeah, because he lived there.
Uh-huh.
So then everybody went to. You got a burner wide open there. We went to church, everybody, and then the mother would usually leave the church a little early on her own and go home and get the food ready. For the rest of us when we came home.
Really?
That was always.
Oh, that was nice. What did you have then, Christmas Day?
Well, that was the same thing that we had. I wouldn't call it leftovers, but we had meat and potatoes, and we lived good.
Regular dinner, though.
Regular dinner. Always regular dinner. That's one thing they did. They always, we didn't have much of anything except we had good food. At least it tasted good to us. It's funny. Still, when I came here, I got food, stayed with my uncle up in North Dakota for 3 months, and I got into some food there that I had never tasted. Of course, I thought I'd never got enough. They had good homemade Midwest hard wheat bread. Put it on a soup plate. He went over to the separator, took some cream, put right on it like French toast, and then sugar on that,
sugar,
and then cut it like French toast. And I ate. Now that was something I wasn't used to.
Some more Norwegian, some more food for Christmas.
Yeah, well, we were talking about waffles. And sandbuckles and crumbcock and all of that stuff, but that was kept in a big tin can, so you had it for weeks after New Year's. But he made enough. Of course, it was you didn't get all you wanted. That was more or less ration. And then when people came to the house, they had to have some of that too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so you had it for when you got
Christmas. Yeah, it wasn't like
you
the other
a lot of
food.
Company during Christmas?
Usually somebody family would come over. We never went any place, and nobody ever came to us as, you know, from an invitation.
Mm-hmm.
It was all if they happened to come by. They
stop by,
they have coffee and some goodies. Mm-hmm. But they didn't do it home, at least when I grew, because I wasn't there all that long. But they never had any parties, I mean family parties.
Oh, didn't they?
Not where I came from.
Oh.
They stayed home, same, like Christmas Eve now.
Well,
the guy went up to church and started ringing the bell there. Well, that was it. I think it was 5:30 or 6 o'clock. The downtown was dead, I mean stores and everything else, and you were home. And then there was nothing open then for days.
Oh, really?
Oh, no. Everything store, you better have it in the house or you aren't going to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Cause they had all their work done before Christmas.
It was all done before, and everybody had holidays off. Mm-hmm. Banks or stores, anything, everything was off. Of course, there was no police or anything like that, so there was nothing to have open. I mean, there was nothing going on.
Yeah.
It was quiet, peaceful.
Did your parents tell you stories about trolls or anything, or
no?
You didn't have any.
We
of that.
Never had any of that.
You didn't have any.
No, we never got involved in that kind of stuff. I guess maybe they never knew anything about it either.
No, my parents never did either.
I don't know. Some people knew a lot about that stuff, but
yeah, I guess they did. Okay, now you said you started work before you were even confirmed.
Oh yeah. Well, good heavens! For money, I started to. Work when I was just a little tight to our neighbor. He had a big farm, and he was quite well to do, and they did a lot of hiring, especially in the haying and the cutting the grain. You know, that mm-hmm. was cut. It was so heavy, it lay down in the rain. You see, you cut it by hand, And we were just little, my brother and I were just small ones, but we were there cutting that stuff for money. We got paid for it, and it was raining. We had gunny sacks, put the hand up through one corner and made a kind of a headgear out of it, and then that thing got soaked wet, and you were wet, but stayed all day long, day in and day out. So as far as work, and that's something we had to do, I guess, when we started to walk, do something around home. There was no playing. Even going to school, we never had any time for play.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Not even skiing?
If we wanted to ski, we had to take a Sunday off or something.
I
go
see.
Up in the, because we had to go so far up to get ski.
I see what you did there.
We had to go way up in the mountains, way up in the valley and up on top of the mountain to get real good skiing. You see, where I came from was like usually out here, you're close to the water, it was mild, the Gulf Stream came by there, and it would probably snow for a week, and then it would rain for 2 weeks, and then you walked in a foot of slush. And you're walking to school in wooden shoes.
Oh, did you?
And you can feel the snow in the heel, in the open heel of your wooden shoes.
Isn't that cold?
I still feel it, because it's cold, but we never died from it. It was good for us.
You never got sick
from that? No. Nobody got sick from that.
Oh.
Heck, no. I think they are babied too much anyway nowadays. Home as well as here. The kids can't do anything on their own. There's no hardship involved at all.
No, that's right.
It comes pretty easy.
Mm-hmm. Too easy. Okay, now, then you worked in a rock quarry?
Yeah, I worked for the truck driver for quite a while. I don't know, about it couldn't have been maybe a year, year and a half. Then I went on a road gang. We made a highway going up to the valley.
How old were you?
Probably 15 or 15, 16, maybe 16 then. You see, I worked for a truck driver while I was confirmed, a little before and then some after, taking those things by hand, those big cobblestones, and throw them up. There was no power equipment, you know.
Yes.
Your arms and hands did it all.
Mm-hmm.
Unload the same way.
Give you muscles, I bet.
Oh, yes, and then the highway, the road work, that was all handwork, you know. You had a long plank and a wheelbarrow and pick and shovel and all that stuff. It was all done by hand, every bit of it. Got into rocks, then you had the experts dynamiting it, you know, and then tried to roll over the pieces and got through. And that's what I did to the time I came here.
You said that you'd always had it in your idea that you were going to come here.
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Because I would say just about half of the population home had been here.
Mm, so you heard about it from other
people? Oh, my gosh. You could go down to the stores in the evening. They would sit there and talk English, you know, and even talk Norwegian about the old logging days out here and fishing in Alaska and farming in the Midwest. It came from everywhere, and then it came home and got married and settled and took over places and then stayed home.
Uh-huh.
And of course a lot of guys came home for visits and back. I had uncles that came home, you know, and went back here again. And so I grew up with people that had been in this country. I heard some my dad had been over 6 years and talked about it. So
what did he think about you wanting to come over here?
Oh, he thought it was fine.
Did he?
Yeah, well, there was nothing. What else could he think? There was nothing home.
Oh, there wasn't.
At that time, you couldn't. You had to scratch all over to make a living. If you didn't own something.
Mm-hmm.
A youngster my age at home when I grew up, that was...
No jobs, huh?
Absolutely nothing. It was... And then
was kind of depression there then?
Well, it sure was a depression. It was so bad at the... Well, there wasn't anybody that I remember that lost their places. They all kept their places, but there was absolutely no money around.
Oh, yeah.
You had plenty to eat. We always had good eats, but there was no cash. You couldn't buy anything. I couldn't buy myself a bicycle. When my oldest brother, he worked in a co-op store, He started too before he was confirmed, and worked after he was confirmed, and because he had monthly wage, and he bought himself a bike, and then after he was confirmed, he went to sea, and I got his bike. I would never had a bike until I started working on my own, and a tough time then to get it. So that, it was tough. Everybody either went sailing or to this country. They shipped out. They had to get out.
Okay, now when did you come?
1929, in March.
March 1929.
Yeah, I was 18 then.
Can you tell me anything about getting ready to come?
That was the same as they all had to go through the quota system. It took me nine months because I signed up to go to a farm. If I signed up to go to a city, it would have taken me 18 months.
Really?
Waiting line. But by signing up for a farm, they cut it in half. So I sent some papers to my, I had three uncles. My dad's three brothers lived in North Dakota. I sent some papers to them, then one of them signed them and sent them back, some kind of a guarantee. And I went to the American Consul and all that stuff got it fixed up. And then
they're right there in Stavanger?
Yeah. The next thing I knew, I got notice that I was accepted to go, and I had to go to the American doctor in Bergen. So then I had to go up to Bergen. And I didn't have any money. They took money to go up there. So my dad says he had a cow that he was going to sell. So he said, take it along to town. So I took the cow along to town. I sold it in Stavanger and got the cash for it. And I went to Bergen. And came back, but what I was supposed to do up there, it wasn't much. You just went through the doctor, he checked your teeth, no cavities, checked for hernia, and that's about all. And then you fill out some papers.
Did you have to have any shots?
No shots of any kind, nothing. Oh. Not a thing. Well, there was nothing wrong with those guys anyway, and then no shots wasn't even heard of. But if you had too many cavities, I think somebody said they told you to go and get it fixed. But I didn't have any, so I didn't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. So that was, everybody had to go through that. But
were you 18?
I was 18. Mm-hmm. I was eight. Yeah, I was 18 then. I was 17 when I got my notice. And I was 17 when I applied, I think. What's it, 16? I forgot. No, it's so long ago. But I was 18 when I went to the doctor, because that was in the fall the same year. See, I was 18 in May, and during that summer and fall, that's when all this stuff happened. Mm-hmm. That I was accepted and had to go. But the American doctor, you see, he was at the consulate, the American consulate in Bergen. They didn't have him in Stavanger, but all the other paperwork was done in Stavanger.
But you didn't go till March of next year.
So I didn't go till March of 29. I got all this stuff in 28 fixed up, and then in 29 I...
So you were actually 19 when you did come?
No, I was 18. I came in March. I was 18 in 19 in May, see? And I came
see.
In March.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I see. All right.
So I was two months short.
How about leaving home? How about your mother? How did she feel about this?
Well, she didn't feel sharp about it. In fact, she was pretty good up to the last day. She made breakfast, and I ate good. And then right after breakfast, she decided to go out, and I could see it. She didn't want to see me leave. I mean, she didn't want to be there. So she went out in the barn, and as I walked out, I glanced to the side. Of course, I could see her through the window in the barn. She was standing there. But my dad, he took me down to the dock. You know, I had to have a trunk along, which was stupid. But everybody, I made my own trunk. I spent weeks on that thing and made it good. And he took me down, and he, of course, he'd been here. It was nothing to him.
Yeah.
He was glad that I'd get out and do something, because it was... He knew very well there was nothing to do
well,
at home.
It's different for keep, fathers, I think.
Well, it's silly to keep the kids at home anyway, if there's nothing for them. And nobody can afford to send you to town if you wanted to go to school.
It's still hard on the mother, though, regardless.
I think it's harder on the mother, because she just couldn't be there when I left the house. I mean, in my presence. She had to be somewhere else. But she was looking at it, so...
Mm-hmm. How about the trip over? Did you sail from Stavanger?
We sailed from Stavanger.
On what?
On Stavanger Fjord.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we came into... we had to anchor up outside Halifax on the Grand Banks for fog.
We went up there.
Yeah, we had to go through. They went into Halifax. But before we came into Halifax, we anchored up because all the fishing boats out there, they were just crawling like an anthill, and he didn't dare to go in the fog, so he anchored up. And just as we hoist the anchor and started out, a halibut boat came across, and we ran right into him.
Oh.
And he hung there till Stavangerfjord backed up. They got the people up on the bows of Stavangerfjord, and as Stavangerfjord backed up, this thing made a little half circle and went down. So we got into...
But you rescued all the people.
Oh yeah, they came on the boat. And then we got into Halifax.
How about the trip over though? How was that? Was that pretty nice?
Well, it's a little rough in March, It was all right for us. It didn't hurt me any.
You didn't get seasick or anything?
Oh no, I've never been seasick. I never get seasick.
Mm-hmm. How many days did it take you, do you remember?
Well, I think it took us 9 days. On Stavangerfjord at that time. Either 8 or 9 days. Mm-hmm. I think we left the...
Why did you go up to Halifax? How come you didn't come into New York?
That's where he went, and then from Halifax to New York.
Oh, I see.
See, when we got into Halifax, we landed at the dock. The whole boat was iced over with ice up in the rigging, Oh. So we were all told to stay off of deck because this stuff came falling down when we got into the dock. So we just stayed there for a half a day or whatever it was, unloaded something, and some people went ashore there too. And then we out again and down to New York. Then we came ashore in New York.
What did you think of New York when you first came?
Well, I had pictured it. It was to me, it wasn't anything unusual. No, we were just standing on deck there watching the Statue of Liberty and all of that stuff. Well, we had seen it in pictures and heard about it. It wasn't all that.
Were you with anybody?
There were three guys from not from my home place, but from neighboring place that I knew. I knew them from home. They happened to come at the same boat.
Uh-huh. Did any of you know the English language before you came?
No. Never.
Okay. You got into New York. What did you do then?
Well, then then I had my neighbor, two of my neighbors were carpenters, and they had a boy apiece, Thomas and Odd. And they were working with the dads, Odd Riska and Thomas Amundsen. Mm-hmm. And they were working with their dads, laying floors and hanging doors in big buildings in New York. They'd been there only a year or two themselves, those kids, but their dads had been there, quite a few years. And they used to come home almost once a year and then go back to New York again. So they begged me to stop over in New York. I could go to work for $10 a day. And, that was terrible hard to turn down.
Sure.
But I was too honest. I was signed up to go to a farm, and I figured I better go, which was stupid because... Nobody ever checked on me. I had my shore money. They had to have $25 on you to get ashore. And I was checked out with my shore money. That's the last thing I ever saw of anybody. I could have gone over to Long Island, Brooklyn, any place. You've never known the difference because I was legal in the country. I could have gone to North Dakota and turned around and come back the next 2-3 days to New York. It would have been fine.
But you didn't.
No, I was too honest. So this Thomas... I told him we've got to have a little lunch for the train, so I gave him an American dollar and told him to get over. There was a stand over there inside that building shed, so I had to have some lunch, and bananas sounded good to me. So he bought a dollar worth of bananas, and he came with a godly big paper sack, and there was bananas there for 100 people. My gosh, it must have been cheap at that time. He shouldn't have bought it, but... I wanted a dollar's worth of bananas, and I got it.
Did you get sick of bananas by the time you got...
Yeah, we ate them all too. Well, we passed them around. Some of the other guys put something else. We ate a little on the train, very little. Then we got to Chicago. There we met a guy that had been... He had been there 2 years, I think, that I knew from home. And he was a carpenter or laborer or something. I don't know what he was. Anyway, he talked to us, and we waited there for quite a while. for the train. You know, we looked like men from Mars. We had tags all over the lapels and all over your name, address, uh-huh. where we were going, and all of that stuff. So the conductors must have been good, because they just came over and looked and read and sent us on the right train.
Really?
So yeah. We get out of Chicago and then we get into Minneapolis. Then we got stuck for a whole day. And a girl from our neighboring place that I knew her folks. She had been in Minneapolis for a few years, and she came down and sat with us the whole afternoon at the depot in Minneapolis. And from there we spread out. When it came time to go, some got to go earlier. I was one of the last ones to get out of Minneapolis. The conductors would come up and read all this stuff, and then he would say, "You go, you know, you come with me. You go here and here."
It's because of the trains?
They spread out. Some went to Iowa, you see, and some went to other places. Mm-hmm. And I went to North Dakota, and I was one of the last ones. So I finally got on the train, and I came up to Minot. There I had to change a train in Minot up to, I was going to go to a little place called Alamo, up at the Canadian border from Minot. Well, there was a little town, by the name of Stanley, in between. And I had to change train in Stanley. I still had most of these things on me. So I got off in Stanley and got in the depot. And I was just sitting there. I was just, you got so used to it, you're just waiting for somebody to tell you, no, you come here and go. So a guy came in walking. He was dark. Overall, you know, the regular farmer overall, farmer cap. It was cool up there, Mackinac on. And he came up and asked me if I was Thurman Upsell. I says, yes. Well, he talked Norwegian.
Uh-huh.
Well, he says he was in Stanley to pick up his sister, and he was going up to Alamo. Well, it happened, so he said who he was. He was my uncle's wife's brother, see, my uncle's brother-in-law. He was a blacksmith up in this Alamo, and he had come right out of his shop to come to Stanley pick up his sister, because she came from Minot. She went to teacher's college, so she was going to come up and stay with him. So Uncle Olaf had told him I was coming, so he says, why don't you pick him up in Stanley? He wouldn't have to go take the rest of the train up to Alamo. So here it is. So who he was. Uh-huh. Then after a bit, I guess he noticed I wasn't too anxious to go with him. So he told me he was my uncle's brother-in-law, and mm-hmm. all in Norwegian, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And he was born, of course, in Mayville, in the eastern part, so all Norwegian down there. So then I went with him, and we came by my uncle's. Well, he took a turn. It was still snow on the ground, and he had a touring car. And you know, it was cold. He didn't have any side curtains.
It was
biting. I wasn't dressed for that. So it was quite late at night when we came up to Alamo. So even my three uncles lived within a half a mile of each other in a kind of a semi-circle.
Oh.
So he went into the yard of the first one and honked the horn. We didn't stop. Then to the second one and didn't stop. And then finally down to Uncle Olaf. He was the youngest of my dad's brothers that I came to. He's the one that signed those papers.
All you want to do was get inside the house.
So we got inside the house, but then I was tired. I hadn't slept, but Uncle Olaf had to talk.
Sure.
The family went to bed. Him and I sat talking. I was sitting there in a chair talking, and I was talking in my sleep. But he was anxious to find it. It was morning before we got to bed. Because he wanted to talk. But then, I don't know, it had been explained to me so many times how it looked. And I actually had it, when I got up in the morning and looked out at these flats up there, it didn't surprise me. I expected it to look like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a couple of days there with, there was quite a few in that same neighborhood from home, and then the family sent stuff. I had my trunk full of stuff for other people. So I finally got that delivered around, and then I did a little farm work and didn't make any money the first month or two because there wasn't much, you know, it was early, it wasn't much going on. But then in the summer, early summer, I went into Williston. That's a bigger town. Mm-hmm. I got in with a builder there, and we built 9 houses from the ground up, from digging the basement to shingling the roof. You know, we did the whole thing.
Had you learned carpenter work in
the you know, it was more or less, some of that stuff is in you. My dad, my granddad was a carpenter, or shipbuilder. You can do a lot of that stuff. It isn't that complicated anyway, after all. But it's a hammer and a saw. Mm-hmm. When you had a boss to lay it out for you.
Oh, sure.
So I did that, and then...
did you make pretty good money then?
Well, we had 40 cents an hour, 10 hours a day, $44 a day. And then I paid 50 cents a night for my room and a dollar a day for board. It cost me a dollar and a half a day for board and room. Two separate places. But my gosh, the way she fed us, that woman, it was enormous meals.
Oh.
And we were all hungry, so... Mm-hmm. I bought the first thing I did. I bought a Model T Ford.
Did you?
Yeah, and I went into. This was about 38 miles from Alamo, from my uncle's farm. So that still was the home base. And every Saturday after work, I hopped in that Model T and drove into the farm instead of staying in town.
Sure.
Well, I don't know if it was stupid in a way. There was nothing to do on the farm. There was always something to do, but I still went to the farm. Yeah, and then after when the harvest season started, then my dad's cousin, he had a farm up there, and he needed somebody for the thrashing. And so I went in there. I got $5 a day in board and room and took in the whole thrashing. I think we trashed for almost a month, and then I bought my ticket, and they all tried to talk me out of going out here. See, I wanted to get out here. I couldn't stand it, but 3-4 months back there, that's...
You didn't like it back there.
Oh, never did.
Well,
horrible
place. Had your father
place.
Been out here? So you
no,
knew about this? Or?
My dad hadn't been out here. He'd been...
How did you know about this area?
Oh, my gosh, I had... half of the people home had been out here, either in the logging camps or fishing. I was going to Alaska anyway. They all talked about it out here. My gosh. And then I had an uncle in Olympia.
What did they say about here?
Well, they all liked it out here. Everybody.
The climate,
and it was just like home, you know. It's trees and water and boats and what have you. It's as much like home as you can get.
That's right.
On a bigger scale. Mm-hmm. These small valleys aren't as big, but it's the same kind of a life, same setup. So I made it. They
so
tried to.
You drove out here. You got.
Huh?
You say you drove out here.
No. I took the train.
You sold your car.
I sold the car. Took the train. And I came out to Seattle. The train didn't go any further. So my uncle was working at the time in Olympia.
When was this now?
In 29.
Yeah. What? In end of the summer, kind of the fall.
Yeah, end of the summer, mm-hmm. before the fall set in. So my uncle's wife, and her youngest daughter. They came up to Seattle to pick me up.
Your uncle was where?
In Olympia. Yeah. He was a boiler engineer for a plywood mill down there.
What was his name?
His name was Torbjörn Fatland. Well, he went by Ornes. They cut out the Fatland, him and his brother, when they came to this country. Fatland didn't fit in right. So their dad... name from way back someplace had Ornes, O-R-N-E-S or E-R-N-E-S.
Oh, yeah.
So they got to be Ornes here, see. So they go by Ornes. That's my dad's, my mother's oldest brother. He is dead now. He got to be 98 years old too. Anyway, that Fatland became Ornes. Well, I imagine Fatland, still there are Fatlands in our church. I mean, used to be.
I've heard the name Fatland out here.
Yes, but the Fat, I don't know how to pronounce it here, Fatland or something. Anyway, they didn't like it, so they took Ornes.
No, blame them.
So I stayed with them I went right to work in the plywood mill in Olympia in the fall. And then, of course, toward spring, I got anxious to go to Alaska, but my uncle didn't know anybody that went to Alaska living in Olympia. So I thought I'd better... do something of my own. I still couldn't do much with the English language.
I was wondering how you learned the language.
No, so I took a bus, and Uncle says, go to up to Tacoma. He says, there's a hotel up on 13th and Market. I did North Tacoma from or Market or 13th or anything. So I took the bus to Tacoma, Greyhound bus, and I got off, and I went up the hill. I happened to go up 13th Street. I was going to 13th and Market. There's a Norwegian hotel, Stratford at the time. The guy that ran it, he was from a place a little bit in from us, called Sun. I didn't know him, of course, I never even heard of him. But anyway, there was a lot of loggers and fishermen who used to stay at his hotel, single guys. So I come up in the hill a little ways on 13th, just about where Sears used to be. There were that Sears garage, there was a small shop at that time. There was a Chinaman. I'll never forget it. I didn't know where I was at, but I knew I had to get uphill to 13th and Market. Then I tried to ask this Chinaman, and then I don't know what language I used, and I know it was Chinese what he used. So I never got anything out of him. So I kept walking a little further, and I got up the Market. And there was Stratford. He had a sign outside, so then I felt good. Mm-hmm. I hit it.
Mm-hmm.
And I quit my job down there. I told the boss what I was going to do. I said, I'm going to Tacoma, try to get to Seattle, to Alaska. So I got up to the hotel, and of course, they were all getting ready. Most of them had a crew already set for Alaska, but there was one guy that he happened to be from in Stavanger area too. He was going to be a skipper for the first year, fishing herring, and he needed a whole crew, 8 people. So when I got to hear that, of course, I went right for him and asked him, and I guess I looked young and hadn't been here long. Of course, I talked Norwegian. That's all I could talk. So he said, can you row a boat? He says, didn't ask me if I knew anything about fixing up the nets or anything like that. Yes, I can row a boat. Yes, I'll let you know. So it took me almost that week. He left for some place and he came back and he says, yeah, I could go with him. Well, at that time, I didn't even know what we were going to fish for. I was just anxious to get to Alaska. And finally, on the way up, I asked one of the crew what they were fishing for. He said, herring. But then that was it. I got the foothold in from then. It kept going to Alaska.
Why did you want to go to Alaska so bad?
Well, for one thing, the money is good, and I wanted to go fishing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could, at that time, you could have done a lot of things. Some of my friends went out to PLU in the wintertime instead of working for $40 a month. They stayed at PLU, mind you.
Yes.
They got board, their room, and their education, whatever they took, for $40 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was reasonable.
Yes.
Some of the guys, especially from Seattle, they spend 2-3 winters at PLU doing that.
Mm-hmm. But I worked. The summertime. Oh, you worked.
I worked, and I paid off my ticket, and I sent home quite a bit, tried to help out. So I figured I was better off doing that, and in the long run, it turned out just as good that I did.
What kind of work did you do?
In the plywood mill, mostly.
Okay.
Yeah, it was good at that time. And then after 1936, then I started to fish year-round. California in the wintertime, Alaska in the summertime. So there was nothing but fishing then.
Oh, you always were gone then. Well, now you said that you didn't know anything about the nets. He didn't ask you at first. Did you have any problem right at first?
No.
You learned right away.
Yeah. Well, I knew some of it anyway.
Oh, you did. Yeah.
So that was no problem.
Uh-huh.
They can tell if a guy is willing to work or can work. You don't have to ask for a job the next year. They ask you.
Sure.
And if you're young and willing and healthy, well, that's all it takes. And have a little common sense. You don't have to be a genius to hold down a job.
So that's what you did. You went back and forth then every summer, up to Alaska?
Yeah, every summer to Alaska. And then after 36, kept going down to California fishing.
Mm-hmm. You didn't ever have a problem getting a job when you came? You came right during the Depression.
Yeah, well, I never had a problem because, like I say, I got in. The only problem I had was in 1931. I shipped out. Instead of fishing, I shipped out on a Norwegian boat to the South Pacific. I was going to take a chance on going sailing. And the skipper, was a Norwegian skipper, he said that we'd be back, I think it was April or something. It was, anyway, plenty of time to go to Alaska. Well, we fiddled around there seven months or something, down all through crisscrossing the South Pacific. Every place, picking up something here, unloading something there. When we got back to Seattle, everybody had gone to Alaska.
Oh.
So there we were left out. Well, I was the only one. I was left out, and there was, then, in 32, in the spring by then, there was absolutely nothing here.
That's what I thought.
So that's when I took a freight train back to North Dakota. That's
the
only thing I could do. There was nothing here. Everybody was out of work. So I hopped the train, and it took me 9 days instead of 24 hours. I got back to the farm, and then I stayed there till 33 in the fall, and then came out here again. So I lost 2 seasons in Alaska, kind of shipping out on that lousy boat. But then that was an experience that was worthwhile. I got to see a lot of places that I've never seen otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to a lot of places with these tramp steamers, you know. You call into every little place and big places.
Did you finally just pick up the language, or did you ever go to school?
No. I went to school was a few days in Olympia, the night school, but I went to Lincoln for a citizenship, that's all.
Did you? When did you do that?
38, was it?
Mm.
37, 38.
Had you gotten involved in Scandinavian organizations or in church here?
Never any organization since, and I never joined a thing.
You didn't?
Nothing. Well, for one thing, I was on the move so much.
Yeah.
But the church here, I never joined the Olivet. We went to Olivet Free Church for a long time, but then we joined Bethlehem Lutheran, and that's 54, 53 or 4, we joined that.
Okay, now you're saying you must have married. Yeah, where did you meet her and tell me?
Well, we got married in. Well, I don't know where I met her. I met her at her sister's place, I think. I knew her folks before that. I happened to that
here out here in Tacoma.
No, in North Dakota.
Oh.
You see, they had what they call these tent meetings.
Yes.
And my uncle was quite active. That's the time when I was back in 32 after I took the freight back there.
Okay.
So my uncle was quite active in this, in these meetings, and so was her dad. So I went with my uncle into a little town, Ray, and they pitched a tent there, one of these big tents, and I was along with that. We got to talking. And her uncle and somebody else, her uncle was Ole Oakland. That's her mother's brother. He came out there finally and went to Alaska fishing too. He died. And so I got to know some of those guys, but I never met her till.
You tell me her name.
Olida.
Olida what?
Her Christofferson.
Christofferson.
Her dad was Olaus Christofferson, and her mother still lives. She's 90, will be 98 now.
Mm.
Her name is Karina Christofferson, or Carrie, we call her here. Yeah, she'll be in 98 in August.
Oh.
Still has her own apartment. Anyway, we met out here.
Is her, she from Norway?
Oh, yeah.
Her mother?
Yeah.
Does she live out here? Does she live out here?
Yeah. Yeah, she lives up here in Furkes. She used to live out in Parkland. She used to live at 100 in Park. Right on the corner of 100 in Park.
Her name is what?
Karina Christofferson. She's been there since, I don't know when. Her oldest daughter is my age. At her sister's place.
Okay, but she'd been going to these tent meetings too?
Oh, no, her folks, that's what we were talking about. Her folks.
Oh, okay,
I met them there.
Mm-hmm.
And she had.
Who was at the tent meeting? Do you remember who was the speaker?
No. My gosh, I don't have any idea who that was.
Okay, that's all right. Okay, and you met her parents there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then, we were talking, you know, but I never met her till I came out here, and her sister had come out here in 35, and her husband, mm-hmm. he's from Norway too, he's dead now, and she came out when she was through high school and stayed with her sister, and there's where I met her.
I see.
I knew them. Mm-hmm. I met them in North Dakota, her sister and husband.
Okay, what were their names?
Ole Dahl and Mildred Dahl. He was from Karmøy.
Oh, yeah.
Kopervik, that's right, out by Haugesund.
Yes.
So he was working here for years. And then he died in 74, I think it was. He was only 68.
Wasn't the doll had anything to do with PLU? He didn't
No, it wasn't even. No, there were some dolls there, but there was no relation. No, he didn't have any relatives. He had a cousin out here.
Okay, so you met her. And
so we met in 38, was it? And then we got married in 39.
Okay, well, you were running back and forth to Alaska all
the time. Oh, yeah.
I
was going to Alaska. Well, it went fine. I guess that's why we've been married 44 years.
Tell me about your wedding.
Well, that was at Olivet. Olivet Lutheran Church.
Was it? Yeah, big one?
And, well, it was good size. The church isn't too big. I think it was pretty full. And the minister was Berg. I forget his first name. Let me see now. Who was the head of it? Elina Oswald. She took care of the whole thing. She was the planner, and she made a cake, and she did the whole works.
She had a beautiful dress, didn't she?
That was a nice
yes.
setup.
Beautiful. Okay. Oh, you had a big wedding.
Yeah, it was a pretty good size for those days.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is the guy that has the flooring company in Anchorage, you know, Maury. He lives in Eugene, Chester. This is my Bering Sea fishing partner, Sigurd Jensen. He was from Bergen.
Okay.
Did you
go someplace afterwards?
We went to Portland, Oregon.
That was our...
Yeah, I don't know what. In March, we were getting pretty close to ready for Alaska then, you see.
Uh-huh.
4th of March.
Don't.
Yeah, when I came back, I came from Alaska in the fall, then we before I went south, then we snuck back to North Dakota. We drove back to North Dakota for a few days, and then we went back to, went down 85 to the Black Hills. You see, my mother's sister lived in the Black Hills. Mm-hmm. They had a ranch there, her and her husband, right at the foot of Mount Rushmore.
Oh, yes.
So we went down to see them and stayed there for a day and then drove home. So we stayed with her brother's place too, up in Stanley. He worked for a hardware store up in Stanley.
But you made your home here in Tacoma?
Yeah, we made our home here all
mm-hmm.
the time.
Mm-hmm.
We never lived any other place.
But then she was left alone a lot.
Oh, she was alone summer and winter,
most
of the time. Well, when I fished in California, then we fished for 3 weeks and had 1 week off.
Then you came home.
Then we came home for a week, but in Alaska, herring fishing, I was gone just about 4 months at a time, but then I started to go to Bering Sea for salmon. That was only a month season, so we were gone a month and 3 weeks at the most. Then you're home again. See,
mm-hmm.
But
well,
then it's not.
That,
then you
yeah.
go right south. So mm-hmm. you aren't home, but you're away from Alaska.
Yeah.
But it was a good. It's a good deal. For in fact, it beat at that time. It was better than any profession in the pay.
Well,
you know.
Made good money.
Oh, you made good money when you had good years, because it's like farming. You could have years that wasn't too hot, but as a whole, it was it had any kind of a wages beat that you working in a factory or anything like that. I mean.
So you fished all the time till you retired?
No. I bought in But Puget Sound plywood, when we started at Co-op, plywood plant.
Oh, yes.
We bought in at the beginning.
And what year was that?
That was in, oh gosh, we bought in 1940, I imagine. 41, I forget now. I forget what year we bought in, anyway. It must have been 41. I started working there in 42, was it? And then Uncle Sam told me they sent two letters down to the plant. I don't know how they found out that I wasn't fishing, because I had registered for the draft as a commercial fisherman, which I was. And somehow they got to know that I wasn't fishing. So they sent me two letters to come up to see him at the draft board, and I figured, I told her, here I go.
What service. Year was this?
Well, I'm trying to think what year it was. It must have been 42.
Uh-huh. Probably.
Around there, because I'd been there just a few months. I'd worked at the plant, because we had just started it. And when I got the last letter, I went out to the draft board and showed him the letter. I told him my name. And one of the board members got up and says, "We'll advise you to stick to your occupation," which was commercial fisherman. That's what I had registered. So I said, "Thank you." And of course, I went back fishing, and I stayed fishing all through the war, because we had to go through troop transport. We took all the soldiers out to the Aleutians, way out in Aleutian Island and back again. And we're coming back from, then we go fishing, and coming back, we pick some of them up and take down again. And go in convoys, and once in a while we had to go by ourselves. And you see this Gulf there was full of Japanese submarines. It was no picnic. But we got through it all through the war, and they left me alone. I never asked any questions, and they never said anything. I fished year round. And then she went to work, because we bought that share. We wanted two shares, but they wouldn't sell us two. But they said, "You can buy one with two names on it, both names on it." So when I went back fishing, we signed a share over to in her name. So she stayed there for many years in the office. If you was employed in the office, she's done bookkeeping work most of her life anyway. So there's where I ended up after I quit fishing. Fishing in California got kind of bad after 1946 and 7. There's hardly very little there. So I think it was 49 was my last year in California. Then I quit that and went just going to Alaska. And coming back in the fall, I would go into Foss Lunch and Tug and work in the yard down there, you know. But there wasn't much to that, so I thought, heck, I might as well quit fishing altogether and go into the plant, because the wages, they had good wages there. So I quit fishing altogether then, instead of having just one season.
What year was that?
I think it was 50.
Mm-hmm. And you worked at the plant till?
Then I worked at the plant till 75.
That's when you retired?
Yeah.
Do you have any children?
No, we never had kids. No, I retired after, I was 65. I was 65 in May, and I retired in August of that same year. So I've been retired now for 8 years. Will be 8 in August.
So have you done traveling, or what have you been doing since you retired?
No. We've been to North Dakota a few times, because we used to go to California, you know. Even if I fished down there, we always end up driving down there, and of course we go Yuma and Phoenix and driving around like that, but I don't call that much traveling, because Yellowstone and up to Banff. I love Banff myself. Yes. That beats anything they have south to me. Mm-hmm. I love it up in the Rockies.
Have you been back to Norway?
Once.
When was that?
1955.
Oh.
We were prepared to go 3 months. We took the train to New York and took the Stavanger Fjord. She wanted to.
Oh, did you?
She wanted, yeah, I wanted her to take a trip on the water, and she was good. She never got sick. She even went and got food for people that was hanging around the railing. It was rough, you know, it was early. That was, yeah, no, well, that was in April. But it's quite rough going home and cold.
Was it?
Yeah, so we got home. Well, I had my birthday just before we got into Bergen. It's somewhere between the Shetland Islands and Bergen. I had my birthday. We had a party that night and got into Bergen at night. And picked up the pilot and took us up to the dock. And of course, we were going to go on to Stavanger on the same boat, but we decided to go ashore in Bergen.
Uh-huh.
It didn't hit me right, because we got up on those cobbles. They still had cobblestones down there. And the taxis were running all over the place. And dim light. All he had was the dim lights on. Something I wasn't used to. No headlights at all. They were all, everything.
Why?
You could see, these little bitty lights coming at you.
Why?
I don't know. So we walked up a few blocks, and it looked, I don't know, it just... I didn't feel at home at all.
Did you? Was it different?
It was just, now I'd been in Bergen before, well, only once, but this was at night, of course. We didn't see too much. So
right.
The next morning, we went back to the boat and went to bed. The next morning we left, and it was nice then looking at it from the boat, you know. It looks
uh-huh.
nice. Then the inside passage all the way down to Stavanger then, you see.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So we got into Stavanger. She talked to her aunt, her mother's youngest sister in Stavanger. We were supposed to go up there that night for dinner. So she made a call from Stavangerfjord, because she is good in Norwegian. She's better than I am. And she talked to her aunt over the phone from the boat, and they had it all planned. And my gosh, we got into Stavanger. It was raining cats, and it was awful. I didn't have any umbrella. I couldn't get hold of a taxi. Her cousin came down. He made two trips, took people in his station wagon and brought up from the dock. And we decided to, a couple of cousins of her and myself decided to start walking. Thought maybe, I guess we missed them. They took another street, because we walked all the way up to her aunt's place. By the time we got there, we were soaked. I had a good new hat on, an overcoat and shoes, no galoshes. Just soaked to the bone. That was a horrible thing to come into. You almost feel like, why didn't I stay on the boat, or why didn't I stay home?
Mm-hmm.
My dad was in town. My mother had died the year before, 2 years before.
Oh, she died.
So, she was young. She was only 66 when she died, but she got stomach cancer. She hadn't felt good all summer. She went into town. Evidently, it was too late, or maybe they didn't know enough. I don't know. But she had surgery, and 3 weeks she was gone. But my dad, he was 72 or 3, and he was, my gosh, he could outwork me when we were home. So we went home to our place and stayed there, and we got right into the spring work, you know.
Oh.
And you can't sit home on a little farm and let the rest of them go out and work.
Yeah.
And so we pitched in, and we did plant potatoes. We did all that it was to do, and then finally got tired and took off. It took off about 2 weeks, and went to Stockholm, Oslo, and Copenhagen, and
mm-hmm.
monkey around. Just, and then we got home. It's peculiar back there. When we got home, it was ready for harvesting time, when haying and stuff. That grass that grew 24 hours a day, because
mm-hmm.
when we left,
you almost see it grow.
Oh my gosh, it was. So then we got into that and finished just about all of that and went into town. We decided we can't wait. We had a round trip going back the same way by boat, but we decided, heck with that stuff. So we went into the Atlantic Hotel in Stavanger at the SAS office and
mm-hmm.
changed our ticket. They took our boat ticket and just transferred it over to
we flew home.
So we flew home.
Well, now, did you see a lot of changes when you were back there?
Some, not too much. The language had, I don't know, there was, they had some people coming in there from other places, not too many. But they didn't talk the way I was brought up. I don't know what to call it, more like a little bemol, a little finer stuff into it that we had. You know, we had that valley language,
dialect,
heavy
yeah.
dialect, yes. And of course, every half a mile had their own dialect anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, these little farms, they looked the same. The old same houses,
really?
I guess they are 200-300 years old, some of them. When they built to stay. And the boats, they look the same. They have a few more pleasure boats. But when I was home in 55, you know, it isn't like today. Now they are floating in money.
Yeah,
now my sister was here. My gosh, what they haven't got. They have everything. They go down to the Dead Sea and bake out. There's a rheumatism. They go to Canary Islands, on Spain, Morocco, all over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we didn't have any money. To, even when we were home in 55, there wasn't that much money, but it was better. Yeah, there's a picture of my brother and I when we were kids.
You still talk Norwegian?
Oh, we used it, yeah.
Do you? Say something in Norwegian.
Well, what am I supposed to say?
No, tell me something else.
See, my Norwegian isn't like your Norwegian.
I know,
see.
That's all right.
Mine would be Landsmål.
I want it on the tape, though. Tell me something else about Norway. Are you glad you came over here?
Oh, yeah. How would I say that?
Tell me in Norwegian why you're glad.
That's impossible to put that over. That you're glad that you're well, glad that you're glad to come to America. That they were glad to come to America. To make America a home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Norge for me, again, Norske, but the further them and the aim place of a further. Yeah, I've been here 54 years, but 18, I come over.
Mm-hmm.
So that the hair, the heim, here heim, so by California, Alaska, North Dakota, and the village you like. But here with the Puget Sound.
Mm-hmm. Mange takk.